Hey everyone, this is Brian from the Tennis IQ Podcast. Josh and I hope that you are enjoying the content and discussions that we put out week after week. If you'd like to support the podcast and help us to continue to produce quality episodes, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/tennisiqpodcast/membership. Currently, we have three tiers of support: the fan level at $3 per month, the supporter level at $7 per month, and the champion level at $20 per month. Benefits of joining the Tennis IQ podcast community include episode transcripts, participation in book club discussions, and access to monthly masterclasses with me and Josh. For more on these benefits of support, head on over to our Patreon page at patreon.com/tennisiqpodcast/membership. Thank you so much. And now, on to the show.
And welcome to the Tennis IQ Podcast. I'm Josh Berger.
And I'm Brian Lomax. And today, Josh and I are going to discuss optimism and pessimism as ways of looking at the future, ways of maybe approaching a match. And if we were to give this a maybe more psychologically academic term, Josh, narrative style, really how we explain things to ourselves. And there's a sort of a pessimistic way one could explain things, and there is an optimistic way one could explain things. And the reason that this has been on my mind, Josh, recently is I think in our last episode, we were talking a little bit about Helen Emms's book, Achieving Peak Performance in Tennis. And she had another thought on pessimism that really struck me. And it got me to think a little bit more deeply about this idea of narrative style, pessimism versus optimism. And one of the things that she said was that pessimism, when expressed by a player, is often connected to their desire to be, quote unquote, right, to be correct. And I don't know, I found that very thought-provoking. It made me think a little bit more, okay, how's that connected to being right? And it led me to think about topics with respect to tennis around uncertainty, right? The uncertainty of who's going to win, maybe fear or dealing with uncomfortable emotions. And I can really see how using pessimism as an explanatory style might help you to feel right about certain things. And then, of course, if you're going to be pessimistic, it's a little bit easier to be right about the result because you're most likely projecting a negative one. That's a lot easier to create than a positive one, right? And so I think it would be great for the two of us to sort of go back and forth on what a pessimistic narrative style is and what it maybe why it occurs, what it results in, and then also an optimistic narrative style. So what are your sort of opening thoughts on this topic?
Yeah, I mean, I think when somebody is pessimistic, they are more likely to be right. And that might be, you know, in a certain way, why that happens. You know, they feel the need to be right, or they feel the need to maybe even be in control of the future of the situation. And I think pessimism can definitely lead to a self-fulfilling prophecy where somebody's, you know, pessimistic. They don't think that the match is going to go well. They don't think that they're going to play well, or they don't think they'll win. And lo and behold, they don't. It doesn't go well. And they're, first of all, they're right. But second of all, in a certain way, it's that pessimistic expectation that contributed to that result in the first place. So I think it's a very interesting topic because I think, you know, we can all probably look back to matches or to certain periods of time where maybe we were more optimistic or pessimistic about our game. Again, everyone's game, you know, fluctuates over time. There's ups and downs. Very easy to think about, you know, how some of those expectations or how that optimism or pessimism in the moment led to some of both the outcomes or results that we had during that period of time, but also, you know, also other things that are not as result-based. You know, how was our fulfillment or enjoyment with the sport for that period of time? Did we enjoy training? Did we enjoy competing? So I think there's a number of important questions here, but I think, you know, as a starting point, being able to identify, you know, what some of those different narrative styles are, some of that, you know, different self-talk, you know, what that players can get into, and then we can start to look at, you know, what the impact of that is.
For sure. Yeah. And I think if we go back to maybe looking at optimism and pessimism, what are they about? They're really about one sort of orientation toward future events or outcomes. And at a very basic level, somebody who is optimistic about, say, a tennis match could be like, okay, I could win, or I have a chance to win. I have the ability to win, not I will win, or so forth. Pessimism, I think, tends to be a little bit more definitive, more, right? I will lose, or I'll probably lose. And so, as you said, Josh, that often becomes more of a self-fulfilling prophecy than anything else. So I think that's kind of what we're discussing here, is that sort of outlook, maybe before a tournament or before a match. What are we thinking about, you know, our chances? And then that narrative style, how we explain that to ourselves, tends to then branch off in terms of attitude and behaviors and our values in this match, which can then really determine what happens. You know, on the optimistic side, obviously it's hard to create positive results, but I think it can, when if we look at behaviors and values, optimism can generate better stuff there. And I think we can go deeper into that. But I wanted to stick with pessimism first, because I think it can be common that people will create maybe some pessimistic viewpoints about what could happen in a match, you know, or at least with the result. And I think there are a couple things that are being addressed. And like you said, Josh, there could be, you know, at an individual level, multiple dimensions to this, right? Like, what's, you know, am I currently enjoying my training? Am I winning matches or losing matches lately? Where's my confidence? A lot of those things can also contribute into how we typically explain things to ourselves. But whatever that is, I think we're trying to deal with one of the biggest things in sport, and maybe in life, is uncertainty. Much of the anxiety that we have in daily life or around sport is due to uncertainty. We don't know what will happen. And I like to think of this maybe in a slightly different way, right? So when there is uncertainty and we're not comfortable with it, pessimism is a way of reducing that uncertainty. Kind of gets to Helen Ems's perspective of being right. So yes, the outcome is uncertain, but if I go into it thinking, well, I'll probably lose and these types of things, then that level of uncertainty maybe goes from, say, a 10 to a 6 or something, right? It's reduced. And through that reduction, maybe our effort level also goes down. Maybe our attitude goes down. Maybe it doesn't. You know, I can see some people, like I used to do this, Josh, in school. I would say, I'm going to fail this test. And then I would not fail the test, right? So even though I said that, it was a way of reducing maybe pressure or expectations, but it didn't change my approach. I still studied and tried hard, and right? And so I think there is a segment of people that can do that, although I have not heard as much of that on the tennis side as I might hear it on an academic side, right? So I think there's this notion of, can we try to reduce uncertainty? And yeah, by creating or forecasting a negative result, you are reducing uncertainty. It may also reduce the fear about the uncertainty, the fear of what will happen if I were to say I could win and then I don't, the fear of what will happen if I try my hardest and I still lose, right? I think you noted before we were recording, that could be a protection factor, right? Protect our self-esteem on that. So I think fear, uncertainty are some things that are being reduced, and in sort of a result of that is you end up being right about this whole thing. And to me, there's a case to be made for uncertainty in sports. And I like to ask people, well, do you like, or would you buy tickets to go see a game in which you knew who would win and you knew everything would happen? And the likely answer is no. That would be a waste of time. You don't need to go see that. But it's the uncertainty of those games that makes it exciting. So if we all knew who was going to win between Carlos Alcaraz and Novak Djokovic in the Wimbledon final, you knew exactly what was going to happen, would you still watch? Some percentage of people might, but it would be fewer than what you would have gotten if the result was unknown. That's the excitement of it. The tough part about that, I think, Josh, is that when we are the protagonists in the match, it's a little harder to embrace that. But I would ask people, all right, let's see if we can embrace that excitement of the uncertainty of it. You have a chance. Everybody has a chance. May not be a big chance, or maybe you're the favorite. Who knows? But if it can be almost like the same attitude you would have when watching other people play, can you bring that same attitude yourself? So I think pessimism as a narrative style helps reduce fear, helps reduce uncertainty, helps you to be right. But I think there's so many more reasons not to be pessimistic, you know, when it comes to being a great competitive tennis player.
Definitely. I think with the uncertainty piece, it makes me think about a presentation from Ken Revizza, Dr. Ken Revizza, who passed away a few years back. I know we've mentioned him at different points in this podcast. And I remember he was talking about, you know, if, and I think he talked about this in a team setting. He did a lot of work in baseball and softball. And I think, you know, sometimes he would say, you know, if all that you care about is winning, there's a surefire way to make that happen. Do you want to know what it is? We can play against some 5-year-olds. And he'd present this to an MLB team or to a, you know, to a college baseball team. Okay, we can play against some 5-year-olds. We can set that up. We can make that happen. And we can pretty, maybe not 100%, but we can pretty much guarantee, maybe it is 100%. We can pretty much guarantee you're going to win every game. Now, to most competitive athletes, that's not so appealing, right? There's also another way to be absolutely certain that you won't lose, and that's to not compete, right? If you don't compete, you're not gonna lose a match. And I think, as you said, Brian, the uncertainty is at least a piece of why we play. It's almost like, you know, if a match was, if something had already happened, and it, as you said, if we already knew the result, would you buy a ticket? Probably not. Would you watch it? You know, a lot of people like to watch replays or highlights, but are people cheering when they're watching replays or highlights? Are they rooting for one player or the other? Not necessarily, because we know the result. The result has been determined already. And I think, you know, we want to get to a point as tennis players where we can embrace that uncertainty, embrace the fact that anytime you step onto court, you can win and you can lose. I think, you know, far too often, people have the mentality that, you know, where they're constantly predicting what's going to happen. Okay, I should win this match. I should lose this match. You know, I'm this match is going to be easy. Things like that. And you know, in reality, are there players that are stronger than other players? Of course, but I think one of the best parts about sport is that we never necessarily know for sure. We see upsets in sport all the time, right? I mean, you know, I think back to Nadal losing to Robin Soderling when he had, you know, been undefeated at the French Open, you know, playing a player ranked much lower than him and lost. And I think that we can think of any top player who has, you know, and they've all lost. They've all had situations where they've lost to players far, 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 you know, ranked far below them. So, yeah, I think, you know, a big piece of when we think about pessimism and optimism is, yeah, it relates to our expectations. And I think you bring up a good point that pessimism is more fixed. Pessimism is this will happen, right? I will lose this match. This isn't going to go well. Optimism, I think, is a little bit more nuanced. I think it's not, I think sometimes it gets maybe a bad rap in a certain way, or maybe it gets exaggerated or thought about in a certain way. Like, I'm just expecting everything to go well. And I don't think that's quite it. I think it's, yeah, I think that something positive could happen next. I think that this match could be great. I think that, you know, I think it optimism can be linked to confidence in terms of, okay, I know, you know, I have good reasons to feel confident in myself, right? Maybe I've been working really hard. Maybe I've had some good results. Maybe I'm really trying to implement my mental skills in a meaningful way. And all of that leads to confidence. And I think all of that also can lead to optimism, where it's like, I don't know that I'm going to have a great match today, but I think there's, you know, I have reason to believe that I can play well and have a good match because of, you know, because of the level that I've been bringing to the practice court, because of some of my recent match results, because of my self-talk, because of, you know, I'm now able to use my routine more and more and more compared to in the past. So I'm, you know, I'm giving myself legitimate reasons why I should feel confident or why I should feel, you know, optimistic, not that I will win or be successful, but that I can. And I think that's critical when a player enters a match. I think, you know, of course people can win when they're pessimistic, but you're certainly lowering the chances in it. You know, believing that you can be successful can really be a difference maker as it relates to, yeah, both the results piece and also, yeah, so many other pieces, including, you know, what you get out of the match in other ways. Do you learn from it? Do you enjoy it? Things like that.
Yeah. And I think it's good that you clarify the nuance on that, because optimism, you know, I think it could be tied to things like self-belief as well, right? It can be tied to another term that is also nuanced and often gets some negative press, is hope, right? You know, you have hope that you can do this, right? It's not a hopeless situation. Yes, I hope I can do that type of thing, or I believe I can. You know, I'm optimistic I can. So I think it is nuanced, because if you go too far on optimism, then you get into sort of a, like the way you phrased it, Josh, like, you know, I'll always win, only good things will happen. That's a bit of a Pollyanna kind of approach to things, right? And so everything that, you know, whenever we're discussing some of these maybe virtues or values of mental performance, there's always a virtuous mean on that, meaning that, you know, a dearth of something or an excess of something are generally not what we're looking for. We're looking for something that's balanced and in the middle. You know, if I look at something like, say, courage, you know, the virtue, courage would be the virtuous mean. A lack of courage would be cowardice, and maybe an excess of courage might be recklessness, right? And so everything that we talk about has this virtuous mean. So I think it's good that you established that. I think also, Josh, maybe another dimension that fits into this is level of control. Because when we're talking about the result of a match, it's not fully out of our control. It's not like the weather. It's not like court conditions. We have some influence over that. And I think that's worth really remembering, is we do have some influence over that. But a pessimistic style leads us to most likely exert less influence over that, or the behaviors, the controllable behaviors that would give us more influence, perhaps we underperform there. Maybe the attitude is lower. Maybe the self-talk is more quickly negative. Maybe we rush more because we believe we're going to lose anyway. And so we actually inhibit our ability to influence the result. Where I think optimism, it is almost something that can help ignite more positive behaviors toward influencing the result. An exercise I like to do, and it was part of our last masterclass, is this idea of the circle exercise. And just at a very high level, the point of the circle exercise is to, inside the circle, write down everything that you can fully control. And then outside the circle are things that are, you know, either fully out of your control or you can, you have some influence over. It's like the score, the result, your rating, your ranking, etc. And the whole idea is to try to be as good as possible inside the circle, knowing that that gives you the best chance of achieving some of the positive results outside. Yet something like this narrative style, a pessimistic narrative style, actually harms your ability to do well in on the controllables. Where an optimistic style, it gives you that hope that you can win. It gives you that belief that you can win. And you mentioned, Josh, one of the ways that you can deal with uncertainty is to not compete, right? And I think optimism actually is a really courageous stance. It takes a lot of courage to say, all right, I'm going to sign up for this tournament. And you know what? I could win this match. I could also lose it. But you just being out there, that takes guts. Takes guts to just simply sign up and then go out there. So I think optimism is really, it's the courageous approach to tennis. Because it helps you to put your full effort into creating something positive. You can go out there with an optimistic approach, do all the right things, and lose. From that, though, you will probably learn more. You'll probably be more proud of yourself. You may even have some satisfaction that you did everything you could. And of course, with a negative or a pessimistic style, you go out there and you will most likely lose. And there's less to learn there, I think, other than don't be pessimistic, right? And will you have that same feeling of personal satisfaction? Will you still be completely proud of yourself at the end of that particular match? Hard to say. Maybe you don't even look at it that way. But I think it's really interesting for people to just sort of contrast how they have spoken to themselves prior to different matches. Because this may not be a 100% of the time way of dealing with it. You might be really good in certain situations. And then maybe you're playing somebody who is supposedly better. And you may have a more pessimistic way of looking at that, right? I know there were years ago, I was kind of in, I fell in that category, Josh. I was supposed to play this guy who's really great, great player. And I was not really thinking I had much of a chance. But then somebody changed my mind. Somebody approached me in the locker room and gave me a lot of encouragement and actually helped me to be more optimistic. And I ended up winning that match. And I completely credit this person in the locker room. If I had gone into that match with my previous mindset, I totally would have lost. I know it. But this guy gave me reason to be optimistic, reason to believe. To me, that's the power of it right there. Power of encouragement, hope, optimism, belief. And I would really encourage everybody here listening to try to understand their own way that maybe they've explained these situations to themselves. And how could you improve that?
Definitely. Definitely. And I think, you know, there's a lot of factors that can lead to, you know, our state of, you know, being more optimistic or pessimistic going into a match. Could be the player that we're facing. You know, what's their reputation? You know, have I played this person before? What's their playing style? I know we've talked about how maybe certain playing styles can maybe lead to some of that optimism or pessimism, right? Maybe you've lost to a servant volleyer. You know, you've lost to servant volleyers and struggled against that playing style in the past. Maybe somebody is, you know, what some might call a pusher, and that frustrates you, or you haven't played well against that type of player in the past. So I think it can be the playing style that, you know, the person and your past history with them. It could be their reputation. It could be their playing style. It could be how well you've been playing or competing recently. You know, I think there can be a lot of factors that can lead to that. But I think we also want to recognize that it's not, you know, our expectations, our optimism, our pessimism is not fixed. I think everybody, just like you brought up that match, where maybe you weren't as optimistic, you know, before that conversation in the locker room. I think everybody has had moments where they've, you know, felt more or less optimistic and more or less pessimistic. And that, again, that's normal. That's natural. I think it's about sort of, can we go into matches maybe not so focused on those expectations themselves? And can we stay focused on other things like, you know, our standards? We talked about that quote from, I think it was from Michaela Schifrin, where we talked, which Iga Swiatek brought up and talked about, how we want to be able to focus more on our, or prioritize our standards over our expectations. And, you know, those expectations, I think, can be positive expectations or negative expectations, but I think either way, they can hold us back. If I go into a match thinking, oh, this is going to be easy, I should win this match, more often than not, I think that hurts us. And I think the same thing goes where if I'm expecting the match to be, you know, really tough, or I don't expect that I have any chance to win this match, that's going to hurt me too. So I think instead, can I focus on my standards? Can I focus on having really high standards? And I think this really connects to that control the controllables piece that we've talked about a lot, where it's, you know, those standards are the controllable piece. What is my standard for my attitude, right? What is my standard for how I want to talk to myself? What is my standard for how well I compete out there? You know, what is my standard for how I'm able to apply some of these different tools? You know, I think being able to focus on some of these pieces is critical in order to, yeah, in order to feel like you're giving yourself the best possible chance. So I think, you know, we want to have more of an optimistic frame in terms of believing that we can be successful, believing we can play well, believing that we can compete. But I think we also want to be able to prioritize the, you know, our standards, our controllable factors, maybe over these expectations, and not be too focused on what we expect to happen or what we think is going to happen, but, you know, more so have that openness about what can happen, which I think is really defined by, you know, is really connected to optimism. And then, you know, it's great if we think that we can do well, but do we have a plan? Do we have a plan for how we're going to do that? What are the pieces that we need to put into play? Which I think, you know, when we're thinking about those pieces, it really connects to our standards and really connects to our controllables. And, you know, what are the tools and skills that I am going to put in place in order to give myself the best possible chance to be successful in this match?
There's a theory in positive psychology called broaden and build theory from Barbara Fredrickson. And basically the theory says that the use of positive emotions, and optimism I think would be one of those, you know, hope, self-belief are also positive emotions, that gives us pathways to creativity, performance, solving problems, et cetera. It basically kind of like widens our view of what we can do. It gives us more options. If you compare that to pessimism, where you're actually restricting yourself on what you will do in certain situation, right? So negative emotions tend to do the exact opposite. We won't have so much of a plan, Josh, because what do we need a plan for if we're going to lose, right? What do we need to have a standard for if You know, the outcome is more or less certain here. And so, you know, even from a theoretical perspective, there are reasons to use more positive emotions in how you look at a future event, because it will give you the best shot of doing that. And if we go back to looking at pessimism as a means of being right, or even maybe being overly concerned with winning all the time, I would say in that regard, being right is a barrier to being great. It stops you. You're not going to learn nearly as much. So I would say to, you know, have the courage to try to be great at what you do. I think it also blocks you from the willingness to experiment with different things and experience those things, because again, you're not sure if they'll work. There's uncertainty there. So, you know, I've encountered this. This might be slightly different, Josh, than the exact topic of optimism and pessimism, but there have been times where I've asked players to try to do something and they'll say, well, you know, that doesn't work for me. Have you ever tried it? No, but I know it doesn't work for me. You know, and that becomes, all right, you may be right. You're making yourself right, but you're also blocking your ability to experiment and experience and become better. And in the end, what are you really being right about? That you can only get so good, or that your sort of fixed mindset won't allow you to go beyond where you are today. And so it's, I think, another thing to look at when, if you feel this desire to be right, or this desire to reduce uncertainty, that you are also reducing your ability to be great as a competitor at the sport, because you'll deny yourself the experience of trying, the experience or the ability to experiment with new ways of doing and being and performing that ultimately will help you to know more. And when we say to know more, it's really to know more in your body, right? We can, you and I can talk about knowing things at an intellectual level. Like, we could discuss the mechanics of a forehand today. People could listen to that. Doesn't mean they know how to hit a forehand, right? They have to go actually experiment with it, experience it, and feel it in the body. And that may take some time. And I think through pessimistic outlook, you're denying yourself some of those experiences, some of those experiments. You may be afraid to do that, right? And I think that's where optimism comes in, and it opens up the desire to experience and experiment and to see where this great sort of tennis project of yours can go. And so I would really ask people to look at that. Again, what have you noticed about pessimistic narrative style in your own careers? Have you had this sort of need to be right about things? Or maybe you've been super willing to be optimistic and experiment and experience things. I think that's part of the, again, the excitement of the journey. It's like, let's see where we can go with this. Who knows what could happen? Good things could happen, right? You know, of course, negative things could happen too, but that's real life. When we talk about realism, it doesn't mean just looking at the negative things that could happen. Positive things can happen as well.
Definitely. And I think there's the old sort of cliche about sort of the glass being, you know, half empty or half full. But I think there's, you know, there's other ways to look at it. It's like, okay, can we look at it in a realistic way? Can we just see the glass? Can we not maybe judge it as, you know, as being so full or so empty, right? And maybe that's a little out there. I mean, I think of sort of the inner game of tennis. And, you know, they talk a lot about being able to see things non-judgmentally. And we recently had our book club, our first book club about the inner game of tennis, really a classic book in the tennis world and in the, you know, sport and performance psychology world. And I think it really underlies being realistic, being, you know, having that realism is really connected to being non-judgmental. It's sort of, can I be able to see things from an outsider's perspective? Can I see things objectively? Can I just look at the situation and maybe not through my own eyes or my own, you know, put my own spin on things, and more so just see the situation. You know, okay, I am playing this person. Okay, it's very easy for me to maybe jump to conclusions and maybe be pessimistic about it, or I can take a different approach. I can go in, you know, more realistically, but I can go in and just sort of see the situation, right? And I think something like that is very connected to optimism, because we're not discounting our chances, right? We're more so just seeing things as they are, seeing things objectively. So I think taking that sort of approach really leads to a player being able to sort of detach emotionally from the situation, from the match. And I mean, I think this is important at a micro level, you know, sort of point by point. We've talked about this as part of the routine, part of the in-between point routine. You know, that's step one, as we're, you know, sort of as we're trying to have a positive response from that last point. Can we just review objectively what actually happened in that last point? Can I just notice what happened? Can I just sort of see it from an outsider's perspective, what happened? So we can take this approach point by point, or we can take it bigger picture, sort of match by match. Can I see from an outsider's perspective what happened in this last match? Right? Okay, what actually happened? Not through my own eyes, through my own spin, or I always do this, this always happens, but what actually happened? And can I take an outsider's perspective? Can I be non-judgmental? Can I be, you know, take an objective approach to something that's happening, you know, that's about to happen in the future, like an upcoming match, right? And I think taking that sort of approach leads to more optimism, because it leads to, you know, the understanding that there's different possibilities for what could happen. Doesn't mean I'm going to win, as we talked about. That's not really what optimism is, or I'm going to play well, or things are going to go well for me. It's that they can't. And I think when we take an objective, realistic approach, we understand that, rather than saying, I'm going to lose this, or I'm, you know, this isn't going to go well, or I never play well against this type of player. It's more, you know, if we can take a more realistic sort of outsider based approach, we understand the possibilities, you know, and maybe the uncertainty that we don't know necessarily what's going to happen, but we have confidence about what could happen. And we can give ourselves reasons for why to feel confident, why we should have self-belief going into a particular match.
Yeah, no, and that's all really good stuff. And I think you're making a great case, Josh, for why we need to be optimistic about these things, and just being more comfortable with the fact that we really don't know. But I think you'd like to give yourself the best chance possible. And I think that's where understanding how you explain what might happen is really good. And can you be, as you said, more non-judgmental about the whole thing? You know, it makes me think about how at various times we've talked about tennis as a life project, as a project. And part of the reason for speaking of it that way is to do exactly what you said, is to not make it about you as a person, but to make this about your project. What's going well with it? What needs work? You know, you're much more than just a tennis player. You lose a match, doesn't mean you're a bad player. They're just, you know, realistically, there are some things we need to work on. And so I think that can also help us adopt a more optimistic viewpoint on the future when we're looking at this simply as, hey, tennis is our project, or is my project. It doesn't mean I'm a failure if I lose. It's just simply something that I will learn from. But, you know, the more that we look at the different component parts of our project, that gives us the more things to do, more things to work on, we can create better results in the future. I think when we get intertwined with our results and who we are, that's where it can become somewhat problematic, right? And I think your point here is very well taken. Can you separate that stuff and be able to look at it in a more non-judgmental way, more objective way? This happened. What can I learn from it? What can I improve? What needs work? What did I do well? And then I think that opens up the door for more experience and experimentation and the ability to be more optimistic.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, being able to separate your identity with what you do is critical, right? It, you know, you are somebody that plays tennis. You're someone that maybe, you know, someone that takes tennis seriously, but you are not just a tennis player. And I think understanding that, there's a great a press conference clip from the golfer, Scotty Scheffler, that maybe some people have seen, one of the best golfers in the world, talking about how, you know, golf is something that I do. Golf is something that I do. I am not just a golfer. You know, when things don't go well out there, which they will oftentimes, you know, that doesn't change who I am ultimately. And I think being able to recognize that, and I think people can apply this to tennis. I think people can apply this to, you know, their profession. I think people can apply this to everything, you know, being able to separate what I do from who I am, where it's like, okay, I, you know, there's a lot that goes into success on the tennis court, right? And we could talk about, you know, many, many, many of these factors, right? There's genetic differences between people and, you know, and body type. And, you know, there's differences in opportunity that people have. You know, there's some people start playing the sport earlier than others. You know, some people are faster than others. You know, there's all these differences. So it doesn't fully make sense to base our identity based on, you know, something like playing a sport that's, you know, so much is really out of our control. So much is based on luck. There is so much, you know, that is, you know, that we can't directly impact. So I think, you know, we want to, and also I think, you know, tennis is a lifetime sport, and tennis is a sport we can, you know, play for a long time as long as our body holds up. But, you know, ultimately there will be a last tennis match that we play. There will be a last time that we're on the court. There, you know, there can be injuries, there can be slumps, you know, things can happen. So it doesn't, you know, by basing our identity too much on what we do, that doesn't really provide for that sort of stable, I guess, holistic sort of way of seeing ourselves. It tends to be more short-sighted because, you know, eventually something happens, right? There are ups and downs. That injury could happen. That retirement could happen. You know, you lose a match to a player that you feel like you should beat, or, you know, you play, you know, worse than you're expecting for a period of time. And I think it's very easy, and I think very common for players, you know, for people's identity to be impacted during that time. So I think instead of that, if we understand how tennis fits into the bigger picture, that this is something that we do, is something that we care about, but it's not who I am. It's just something, it's a piece of who I am. It's something that I care about, something that I love. It's a project. It's a life project for myself, and I want to see how far I can take this. I think when it's seen in that way, rather than this is everything, it takes some pressure off. You know, if I am just a tennis player, then every time that I go out there, I better win, right? I better win. I need to win because it's, you know, that's everything to me. Where if not, if it's like, no, tennis is something that I do, I'm trying to be the best player I can be. And I know that by being the best player I can be, this leads to me being, you know, a better and better person. I'm learning a lot. I'm improving a lot as, you know, as a player, as a person. Then that's, I think, seen in the right way. Where if not, if tennis is everything, if this is a, you know, our entire identity, then we need to win. And that adds a lot of pressure. And then I think in certain ways, I think that, you know, tying it back to our discussion on optimism and pessimism here, I think, you know, that can lead to loss aversion. That can lead to us wanting to avoid losing, because that's, if I lose this match, that's really going to impact my identity. If I'm a tennis player and I lost this last match, or I lost my last few matches, then what does that say about me as a person? If that's all that I am, if that's, you know, 100% of my being, then what is that say about me? So I think, you know, if tennis is sort of framed in the right way, if it's not everything to us, then, you know, we can go into things with the right sort of approach that, hey, I have the tools, I'm confident. I have self-belief in my abilities, but ultimately, if it doesn't go well today, I am still okay. I am still the same person. Nothing is fundamentally changing, and I can go out there and play another match. And then in a year or in 5 years, you know, I'll have other opportunities. And, you know, none of that fundamentally changes. So I think the identity piece is really key here.
Yeah. And I think by separating it, like we're talking about, yes, it takes pressure off, and it actually may allow you to use some of that sort of broaden and build theory benefits. It will allow you to be a little bit more positive about things because the consequences are less dire. Right. And so I think that's all really good stuff. I think it would be interesting, Josh, and maybe if there are any researchers out there, this could be an interesting sports psychology project. But you mentioned some time in a past episode about like how the stock market generally, you know, it's got its ups and downs day to day, but, you know, a lot of times there's a positive slope there. One of the useful screens on UTR's site, the Universal Tennis Rating site, is the one that has the graph of the one-year trend of a player. I think it would be really a very interesting study to look at players who have more of an optimistic narrative style versus pessimistic narrative style and sort of longitudinally look at them over the course of a year to see what would happen. My hypothesis would be that we'd see more growth on the optimistic player. But that's a hypothesis, and I don't have any particular evidence other than maybe anecdotal to prove that. But I think that's what I would propose to even a player is let's look at the trends. Let's, you know, if we would like a trend to create, there's going to be ups and downs to that. There will be losses in there. But I did this the other day with a player. Her UTR had gone up a full point in 1 year. Another player had gone up like 0.75 in the last 6 months. And to me, the message is like, we just keep doing what we're doing. It's clearly working, right? We don't need to change anything. And that means, you know, there's still going to be some losses in there. But the growth is positive, and we want to continue that growth rate. And I think being able to separate results from who you are is important. The ability to be optimistic about what's going to happen day to day or even in your career is really important. So that's kind of my final thought on this, Josh. Any final thoughts from you?
No. I mean, I think, you know, one thing that I would suggest is, yeah, for people to really take a look back, think about certain times where maybe, you know, one match in particular where you felt more optimistic going in, right? One match where you maybe felt more pessimistic going in. You know, I think, as we've talked about, it's so easy to say, you know, I will win or lose this match, or I should win or lose this match. But, you know, as we talked about, optimism isn't exactly that. So when have you gone in to matches, you know, thinking, hey, I can play well today. I can do something special. I can win. You know, when have you had that sort of approach, and when have you had a different approach, and what were some of the results? Not just in terms of your success and, you know, did I win or did I lose, but how did you play? How did you feel? Did you feel more stressed out there? Did you feel more relaxed? Did you make better decisions? Did you have, you know, in between points, did you have more of a, did you feel the ability to sort of slow things down and reset? You know, how did it impact things? So I think as we start to look forward and think about how you can apply an approach, you know, more of an optimistic approach, it's also important to look backwards and to learn from some of your past results in, you know, what you did well and what didn't go so well that you want to improve upon. And I think we can look at different types of matches and hopefully learn from those experiences. And I think that there's, you know, for most players, you know, a lot of data there that would point towards the optimistic approach, you know, leading to far, far greater results over time.
Right. Well, great discussion, Josh. A lot of good nuances on optimism and pessimism as narrative styles and amongst other topics today. So thanks for that. And thank you for listening. For more on today's episode, please check out the show notes. If you have any feedback or questions for me and Josh, please email us at tennisiqpodcast@gmail.com. If you're enjoying the content that Josh and I discuss nearly each week, please rate and review the podcast so others can find it. Additionally, please subscribe to the show on your podcast platform of choice, including YouTube, so you can be notified of new episodes, and you can also check us out on Instagram. If you would like to support the podcast, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/tennisiqpodcast/membership, where you can learn about the benefits of being part of the Tennis IQ podcast community. Thanks again, and we'll talk to you soon in our next episode.